Welcome back to the Sip and Feast podcast, episode number 44. Tara, what are we doing today?
For episode 44, we are talking about the best recipes to make for spring, to welcome spring, to celebrate spring, to embrace all that spring represents, knowing that summer is not too far off.
Yeah, summer's not too far off. I actually grilled a few days ago with James, showed him how to use the grill. Got a lot of flack on Instagram for using those one of those wire cleaners. Oh boy. Oh boy. Honestly, I think people are right. I think I'm just going to stop using them.
Yeah.
Right?
I think you should because of all the comments that we got.
Yeah, but I'm also not gonna mess because around.
I have heard that those little wire bristles can become loose and get into your food.
Yeah, I read a article, I believe, or it was a message board or something, and this guy said, he's like, I am a surgeon, ER, you know, for the ER, and he said, we get a few people each year.
Okay.
So, you know, honestly, that was enough for me.
That's it.
I don't want this to devolve into just talking about grill brushes, but I just wonder why they continue to be sold everywhere. Then again, there's lots of things do lots of damage to us that are sold everywhere.
I mean, you could walk into any liquor store.
Yeah,
like, okay.
That's right.
I'm sure there's a lot more ER visits for drunkenness.
Oh, well, alcohol is always the best example. It's like anything that's bad, it's 100 times worse with alcohol. Like people are like, oh, this drug is bad. This stuff's bad. Yeah, it's like, look at the numbers of alcohol-related deaths. It's like a million versus all the other drugs combined don't even come close, but I digress.
You just made me think of something your dad always says.
What's that?
Your dad is a lawyer. He went to law school. He doesn't practice. But I remember him telling me that while he was in law school, they told them that the formula for an attorney is ATY, alcohol, testosterone, and youth. You combine those three things, you almost always need an attorney.
Yeah, you'll never go broke. You'll make a killing. Yeah. There's this guy that, again, I digress, but this is a good one. So my friend Josh, I hope you're doing well. Love you. He's one of the guys I've stayed in touch with over the years. He told me about his friend who, growing up, had like the biggest house in the neighborhood. And I think they lived in Merrick or Belmore, somewhere like that, like on the water. It's a very expensive area for those of you who don't know Long Island. Anyway, this kid, you know, who was friends with him, his father used to just hang out at the courthouse in the Bronx every day and look for those people that were youth, probably dealing with alcohol and whatever else. And now most of it was just traffic tickets, I guess, like getting these people off very easy. You know, the lawyer would be like, I'll get you off. How much cash do you have on you right now? It was a completely cash business.
Yeah.
Guy was making like $2 million a year.
Jeez.
Coming home with a suitcase of cash every day. So yeah. But you know, other lawyers want to do more proper things. They would prefer to make less and not do that type of work.
Yeah, definitely. Oh yeah. My God.
So right, anyway,
let's get back into spring.
Let's push it back.
Spring back into spring.
Yeah, we are going to spring back into spring. But before we spring back into spring, you can see what's behind me right there. And that is the taste test that we're doing today. Those are two different tiramisus. And one of them looks phenomenal, Tara.
Mm-hmm.
And that one happens to be from Costco. And I've seen it there for many, many years. Or a version of it. They come in cups. So we'll go into that one. And the other one is kind of doesn't have to be refrigerated.
Yeah, it's like a shelf stable tiramisu cake that I got from Uncle Giuseppe. So it's an Italian brand. So I thought it'd be interesting to compare the two. Obviously, I'm thinking the refrigerated version from Costco will probably be better, but I'm curious to see if the shelf stable one could stand up in a pinch.
Well, the shelf stable cornetto that we had a few weeks ago was not good.
It was a bit of a letdown.
Yeah, it was a 3 out of 10. So we will find out later. We're just setting it up for now. That will be towards the end of the episode. Let's get into the meat of this one though, Tara.
Yeah, so I thought we could talk about spring and spring recipes because I feel like this is kind of a weird time of the year, right? You're not really wanting the super hearty, stick to your rib type of meals anymore, but you're not ready for some of the lighter food that you would eat during summer. And maybe the springtime is the time of year where you really start to pay attention more to your diet if you have some goals for the summer of
if you have goals it would be now like is the
fitness,
time
fitness goals I'm talking about
my goal is to get bigger and so I'm going to get a pizza oven and make lots of pizza and bread in the backyard.
Everybody has goals. It depends on what your goals are. For myself I can only speak for myself. I would like to drop a few pounds before the summer comes.
I want to increase.
Yes. You're on track. You're going to achieve those goals. You're going to smoke those goals.
No. I would prefer to be lighter. Also, I am not going to take Ozempic, no matter if I guess the whole entire planet is, because it's, you know, it's like the fastest selling drug of all time.
Yeah, but I think once you start taking something like that, you are basically like resigning yourself to take that for the rest of your life.
I have read that.
I don't know. So that I would be very, very cautious. Unless you have some sort of, I don't know if they even, I can't even talk from like a place of authority on this, but unless you have some sort of metabolic issue or like a thyroid issue or something like that. I mean, you definitely shouldn't take something like that. You just need to portion control.
No, I just need to eat less. And that's, you know, obviously this is not what this podcast is going to descend into. I mean, we make really delicious food for a living. Like it's not, we're not doing the healthy stuff. Though I think portion control is where it's at. You have the, you make the good stuff. You just don't eat more than one portion.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, limit your portion, but then maybe load up on things that are lower in calorie that still kind of can be filling, like vegetables.
Actually, that's
salads.
That's important to talk about today.
Yeah,
which is what we do a lot.
I do want to talk about the salads and stuff, but I thought maybe we could start off by talking about some of the ingredients that you would think of when you think of spring.
Great
idea. For me, I have my own, but I want to hear what yours are.
Actually, I think of kind of like peas, almost like pea pods.
Are you looking at my notes?
No, I'm not. I didn't look at it.
You're like, I see your eyes.
No,
like,
no, I didn't look at it. So okay. I think of like spring pea pods. I'm actually trying to like think of like restaurants we go to and what they serve in the spring. I think something that would be nice in the spring would be like a gazpacho, like a cold soup.
Mm.
I think cucumber, anything is good in the spring, like a cucumber margarita. Obviously salads. I'm trying to think from the perspective of, I used to grow vegetables like all seasons. So I would have like stuff growing in the garage in like, I'd start my seedlings in the winter. And then I would grow those vegetables that wouldn't like, that don't do well when it gets hot. So you'd grow these kind of early before it gets hot. And then when the summer's coming towards an end. So yeah, it would be a lot of different types of greens.
Yeah. I think of asparagus. I think of artichokes.
Oh, definitely artichokes.
I think of, like you said, peas. Peas are on my list. And I think of fennel. Like, I don't know when fennel does well as far as...
I've never grown fennel. Yeah, or maybe I did it one year.
I don't know. But I think... I feel like fennel is a very refreshing type of vegetable.
Did I grow fennel? Did I ever grow fennel?
No.
It is a refreshing vegetable. They used to put it on a salad in... this place we used to go to was a good place for a long period of time. Then it kind of like went downhill, which is kind of the story of all restaurants. Like if you're a restaurant that's been going for like 20 years and you're still kicking butt, well, you are a unicorn. So that restaurant was really good. They used to serve shaved fennel on the salad.
I don't know what place you're talking about.
Cafe La Strada.
Oh, they're not around anymore.
I know. I said they're not around anymore.
Oh, I thought you said you said they went downhill.
I said it was good. Then they went downhill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like they're still open and not doing well.
They're not open.
Okay.
That's because they went downhill, I guess.
Yeah. So they did. Now where they are in Hapag, Steve's Pico La Bussola is there now, which actually that place is really good. I don't think you've ever been.
I've never been there. I actually grew up like right there. That's exactly where I grew up. If any of you are Long Island people and you know that area, that Hop Hog Smithtown area, it's where I grew up. I'm giving you all the information about me. Go look me up.
Yeah. But I do think of fennel. I feel like fennel is a good transitional type of ingredient that can take you from winter through spring into summer. And I say that because I feel like fennel is very, I know it's good for digestion. Like I said, it's refreshing and it just, it makes me think of spring. And you can put it in salads raw, you can grill it. It's,
oh yeah,
it's
grilled.
Pretty, it's we great.
Have a grilled,
in,
we have a grilled recipe.
We do have a grilled fennel salad recipe. And you can also.
Oh, that's so good with grilled lemons too.
Yes.
And do I put pine nuts on it?
Oil cured olives. You put
oil cured olives. Yeah. So this is another Sicilian recipe.
And it's used in pasta con la sarda, which is actually today, the day we're filming this is St. Joseph's Day. It's March 19th. That's one of the traditional pastas that are served. So like I said, fennel is something you can eat raw, you can cook, you can grill. It's, in my opinion, a really good spring ingredient.
It's a really, it's a beautiful ingredient. It's underutilized by, I think, a lot of home cooks. I'm glad she brought up St. Joseph's Day. So I posted a little short video on Instagram about an hour before we're filming this and got a couple messages already saying like they can't find fennel in the store. So I think part of it is that it's not an ingredient that maybe a lot of supermarkets stock in every state.
Yeah. I mean, it's in abundance here. I've never not been able to find fennel here in New York.
Yeah. Well, here, but, you know, here you have different ingredients than in other states.
Yeah.
We also get a lot of comments, messages about broccoli rabe just being difficult to find. Yeah. Escarole is another one too. Escarole is actually one that is good to grow also.
That's right.
Yeah. But that's a winter. That's like a winter green. That's like a tough green.
So those are some of the vegetables I think of. I also think of like lamb, maybe some lighter pork dishes or chicken dishes, lighter soups that are more brothy and less hearty that will often have like a lot of greens in them. And then I also think of seafood like shrimp and clams. I feel like springtime is a good time to start breaking that out, even though that's eaten all year round, but it just makes me think of lighter type of fare.
It's funny. We have this place near us. The name is, Tara, I'm drawing a blank. It's where they have the shrimp scampi roll. DJ's Clam Shack. Man, showing my age right
me
now.
Too,
the big 4 or 5, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, this place is good and they're open all year long, but I don't really want to go there until the seasons change.
Yeah,
it's like the clam shack, those roadside clam shacks. You don't really want to have it.
It's funny. I don't crave it in the winter. And then the second like a 60 degree like day hits where it's sunny, I'm like right away, I want fried calamari. I want a lobster roll.
Yeah.
Something from a clam, from like a clam shack type place.
Just so you know, a little inside baseball here. As we film this, I have 3 remotes next to me. That's for all 3 cameras. There's no producer here or anything. It's this guy right here. And I'm like, I tell her, like, I stop it. Look, if you ever do this stuff for a living, you want to stop your recording. If you lose a recording midstream, say your battery goes, you will lose all the footage. You'll have to then get a recovery program. Often it won't work. I had this happen the other day to me when we were doing a cooking video for Greek Leg of Lamb. So anyway, here I stop about every 10 minutes. So if we film an hour episode, there might be 6 clips of each camera. So it'll be 18 clips. But I just stopped now early. And she's like, Tyra's like, why are you stopping? I said, do I sound raspy? She goes, you always sound horribly raspy.
Well, I didn't say that. I said, you don't sound any more raspy than you usually do. You have a raspy voice.
I know. And you have a beautiful voice.
Thank you.
So I
don't equate raspy with not nice. I like raspy voices. Like Demi Moore, I used to like want her voice. Like I always liked the sound of raspy voices. Sophia Bush is another one with like a super raspy voice.
Who is Sophia Bush?
From One Tree Hill, Sammy's favorite show.
My daughter thinks like the One Tree Hill cast is like the most popular actors and actresses on the planet. I was like, she's like, oh, Patrick Murray. What's his name?
Chad Michael Murray.
Chad Michael Murray. That's a weird name. That's a fake name. definitely fake name. It's she's like, he's in this one and this one. I'm like, who the heck is Chad Michael Murray? Like, I supposed to know that?
You're not, because you're a 45-year-old man.
Yeah. Well, I know the people from 90210 because we watched that when we were young. Yeah,
One Tree Hill came out in like the 2000s. You shouldn't really.
You actually told me that because Tara is forced to watch these shows with our daughter, and you said you tuned into 90210 and you couldn't believe how horrible it was.
Not with Sammy. Sammy has never watched 90210, but I remember trying to watch it like, I don't know, 15 years ago. And I was like, I can't even, how did I ever watch this show? Yeah. It's horrible.
You know, that guy, Ian Ziering, he got like three like homeless people attacked him and he like beat him, like fought back and really? Like won or something. It was like in the news like a couple of weeks ago.
All right. Too many tangents.
All right.
In this episode. let's go back and talk about Spring Food. So I just
can't picture that. Like this guy, Ian Ziering.
Yeah, fighting. I can't either.
Well, that's California for you.
Yeah. So I have some spring pasta recipes here. I have spring main courses and some salads. I was going to rattle a few off. I don't know if you want to talk about them in more detail. The spring.
I just want to get to that tiramisu.
I know. Let's be patient.
My stomach is growling.
God, that's always a problem too. Okay. Spring pastas. Now I'm naming the spring pastas that we have recipes for on our website.
Yeah.
I am sure there are plenty of other spring pastas out there. One of which we had at the Trattoria last year during spring. It was some type of delicious pasta it was like a pea pesto with prosciutto. Do you remember this pasta that we had?
I don't.
It was one of the tastiest things I've ever eaten. But anyway, let's go back to the pastas that we have recipes for that we can point you to. So I feel like the king or queen of all spring pastas is primavera. Primavera in Italian means spring. So it's a springtime pasta.
I think that one is 100%. Now, the way I did it on the video, the recipe on our website, is quite different than the version you're going to see on 99% of the recipes on online or videos. I just felt that it was really boring the traditional way. And I actually said this in the video. I said, I never order this dish in a restaurant because most of the time it's bad.
Yeah, often it's not good. Anytime I've ordered it, the vegetables kind of taste waterlogged.
Well, they might be using frozen vegetables.
They might be using frozen.
Which a lot of restaurants do this.
Yeah. I never really, sometimes it's with garlic and oil. Other times it's in like a white cream sauce, but I was never fond of it.
So yeah, garlic and oil, I think, is the better way to do it if you want to keep it to more of that traditional way. Then Tara's saying a little cream sauce. It's not really cream per se. That it'll normally just be like more cheese. Honestly, for this one, I am going to make an exception. Parmesan would work probably better here because it's lighter and you want to stay lighter with the light vegetables. Mm-hmm. I think the pecorino could potentially overpower it, though I put pecorino pretty much on everything. It's funny, cream I actually saw when I was doing research for Primavera. It was, I believe it was the Four Seasons or it could have been La Bernardin. It was some really high-end restaurant in the city, and pasta primavera is one of their signature dishes.
Wow.
So I'm like, people are going in there, like these, you know, these rich executives, they're going into this place and they're ordering pasta primavera. I could not think of anything more boring than that. But they went in there and they like filmed a video and how it was made. And again, I'm not sure if it was the Four Seasons or La Bernardin or I don't know. It's one of those three-star restaurants, which there aren't that many of them in the city. So they put cream in it, and they did blistered cherry tomatoes. So I thought that was really nice how they added the cherry tomatoes in there with the cream. But they poured that cream in, and they served it right at the – oh, and they cooked it at the table. But the cream, they like didn't even like emulsify it or anything.
Really?
It was very different.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, they know what they're doing. I mean, you know, not the way I would have done it, but I thought that was cool. And so then I said – and again, I was like on this quest to do something different here. So I was like, let me just do more hot red pepper, and then kind of like the vodka sauce style. So I used a little bit of tomato paste in there, mm-hmm. and then the cream. So I almost made like a pink sauce.
That's right.
Now I'm breaking the rule here because primavera is supposed to be white.
But that's a good rule to be broken. If it's not broken, don't fix it. In my opinion, primavera is kind of broken. So
it's just a broken dish. It's not a good dish.
Yeah, it's not. And the way you made it, I really liked. And you added some what I would consider to be non-conventional vegetables to it. Right? Didn't you have asparagus and broccolini?
Yeah, but those are all spring vegetables still.
I know, but anytime I've had primavera in a restaurant, it's been like green zucchini, yellow squash, carrots.
I did put those in. I didn't put carrots in, but I did do the squash.
Yeah, no, I know, but you kind of did a little bit more. Yeah. And you had I think it was the English peas.
So they were delicious.
They were firm. They were more firm than if you would have used...
Well, they were fresh shelled peas.
They were fresh.
They were fresh instead of using frozen peas.
That's right. So I think that was like 2 or 3 years ago that you filmed that video. But I really, really enjoyed your recipe more so than I have any other primavera that I've had.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, look, that being said, I'm still, even though I thought it was good, it's not something I really desire too much to make.
But it is a springtime pasta.
It is. It absolutely is. You know what was a really nice spring one? It's not really spring per se, but Trattoria again. You know, we keep talking about this place. This place is like, it's better than pretty much all the Italian restaurants here. And Long Island, the city, the surrounding area has more Italian restaurants than anywhere else in America. I know Chicago has a lot too. But by and large here, this is such a much larger area because you're just talking Chicago. Like here, you're talking, you know, you're talking 100 miles in every direction. And I'll just say, like, Trattoria, it's not supposed to be a fancy place. It's a very small place. It's not, like, you're not getting, like, unbelievable table service, though the service is good there. But it's about the food, and the food is excellent.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Had one time I had a bad meal there. I don't think the head chef was there that time. I think and it's a very small place. You could kind of see in back there what's going on. But I think what happened was, I'm going on a limb here, he probably got sick and then he probably had to have one of his guys who maybe just did appetizers or pastas. He had them do everything. And yeah, one of my meals was gone. But I mean, I got to say, the amount of times I've been disappointed at other restaurants in the last 4 years has been astronomical, where we don't even, so many restaurants are being eliminated from our list. So when a new one opens, we're like, let's try it. And by the way, if a new one screws up, this is like my advice of the day, I guess. I still think you got to give them a pass in the beginning. What do you think about that, Tara?
A new restaurant?
Yeah, I think they're getting
stuff figured spot. Out. Yeah. Of course they get another chance.
Yeah.
I mean, were you good at something when you first started? No.
No, it's not even about them not being good. It's their staff.
It's the staff. They're all trying to work together in tandem. And if they haven't figured out that chemistry or what works yet, then of course they get a pass. But maybe you just... I don't know. I mean, I like the idea of going to a restaurant right away to show support, especially if it's local. But, you know, don't judge them on that first time. Maybe wait till, like you said, the 6 month mark to really be like, all right, now I'm gonna judge.
Again, you're right. Tara's right. And again, about bringing this back just simply to that restaurant again, which it's not like he's paying me on the side. Which he doesn't need to, because the place is always crowded. You always have to make a reservation a week in advance. Month in advance sometimes. Like, it's better than all the other places. That's every place. And I've been to so many of them. Now, I haven't been to Via Carota. You've been there. Mm-hmm. You still think Trattoria is better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, the city is a tough environment. It's hard for the city to compete. It's like you're paying double or triple right away. And it's just not ideal. But we are going into the city in not too far from now, which I think we're going to go to a nice restaurant for that.
Yeah, but that's not under our control.
No,
somebody is dictating.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right. So Jim, let's bring it back here. Yeah. So because I do have a few other springtime pastas. Why don't I just read off my list, and then you can pick one or two that you maybe you want to talk about in more detail. Okay. Lemon asparagus pasta, shrimp, tomato, and basil pasta, artichoke and breadcrumb pasta, which that one's kind of based off of our baked artichoke heart and breadcrumb side dish, orzo with shrimp and feta, and linguine alla vongole.
These are all good, very good choices, Tara. I like all of them. Now, asparagus, if you're okay with eating asparagus, some people aren't. That's a great one. You know, the asparagus issue that I'm not even going to talk about it now, but you probably know what I'm talking about. I love the artichoke one. If you're an artichoke fan, though, I don't necessarily would equate that to a spring one. I think that can be enjoyed all year long. Mm-hmm. Linguine with clam sauce definitely is a spring one, but again, all year long, it's great. There was one that really stood out to me there that you mentioned. What was the other two?
The orzo with shrimp and
feta.
That's
it. That's it. The other shrimp one is good with the spicy peppers. I think I used like little Calabrian peppers for that. That was good. I really like that orzo dish. You liked it too, right?
Yeah, I feel like that's a perfect springtime dish.
So the video's not out yet. Actually, this episode will be out before that video's coming out. The video will probably be out a week after you listen to this episode. So go to the main channel. The main channel is Sip and Feast. The podcast is the Sip and Feast podcast. I'm very original, you know? But that's where I want you to go right after you listen to this. Just check if it's there because it's an awesome dish. Now, it's been on site. It's on the site. So if you just, you know, if you're listening to this and, you know, you can just go straight to our website and get the recipe. And it's so simple. Mm-hmm. I get so many people messaging me about that. You know why I think? Because I think in the Brajol, we talked about it as well.
You did. And I think you showed a clip. Okay. The picture of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. People are like violent. Like they're like, where's the shrimp in orzo? And I'm like, it's not up yet.
You know,
I put up one a week.
Yeah. Okay. So those are some spring pastas. And then I have spring main courses. And the first one that I put on the list, I did for a reason. We have a recipe on the website for baked chicken legs with Cajun seasoning on them. And the reason why I put this is because sometimes in the spring, like I said, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But sometimes kind of warm. And you kind of don't know what you're going to get weather-wise. So I feel like these baked chicken legs kind of give you that outdoor type of flavor, like that maybe you'd get from grilling, but you're baking it in your oven.
Yeah. They're good. It's a good, simple recipe. The way you can make them better, and you could do it with this recipe shows you how to do it, but really anytime you're doing meat of any type, actually the lamb, the leg of lamb, the Greek leg of lamb was done this way too. Just salt it overnight. So it'll just dry out the meat, especially with chicken. It'll dry the skin a little bit. So it'll get crispier when you put it in the oven. And then we have a recipe for a homemade Cajun spice, which is easy to make and it'll save you some money instead of buying those little ones in the store. Mm-hmm. Go to Costco, you buy the big things of everything, and then you make your own Cajun spice.
Yes.
And I use it a lot because I make a lot of Cajun food.
I love Cajun food.
Right?
Another.
Just made it last night, actually, I add a Cajun spice to the corned beef hash.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
You didn't realize it?
I just tasted, like, I feel like the corned beef is kind of a strong flavor.
Yeah. The corned beef, we had leftovers from our St. Patty's Day party get together. So I think I made like 7 pound corned beef. So we had about 2 pounds left. So I was like, let me, and I actually used the leftover potatoes too. All right, let's forget it. That's not spring though.
Okay. Yeah. The next one I have, and it's incorporating one of those ingredients that I talked about earlier, is chicken thighs with fennel and cherry tomatoes.
Oh, wow.
I feel like that's a really good one. It's one that we don't talk about often.
We have so many recipes. Yeah. I can't even remember all these.
But that's like a good light one for spring and it's very easy to make.
That is a great one. It's funny. I keep thinking of the feta angle because I guess because you spoke about the shrimp one. Mm-hmm. That dish would be great with the addition of like a feta cheese in there, some type of salty cheese too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I keep thinking of shrimp saganaki. I keep saying it. Tara's like, when are you going to make the shrimp saganaki? So saganaki in Greece is just the cheese. I forget the name of the cheese, but it's normally done just like that, like the broiled with like this tomato and lemon. But here in New York, all the Greeks in Astoria created a dish called shrimp saganaki. So this is, again, just not just Italians who did it. When, you know, you come here, you make different dishes with the ingredients that were available and stuff. And it's fairly popular. It's on a lot of menus in Astoria, which happens to be where my mother is from. But I keep seeing pictures online on this Saganaki, and I'm like, I gotta make this thing.
So then you should make
it. And I just can't stop saying Saganaki.
I know, I think you like to say it. It sounds like a Japanese word, but it's not.
It's not.
Yeah. All right, another one I have, again, for the same reason that I listed the chicken legs, is garlic butter steak bites. Because maybe you're in the mood for some steak on the grill, but again, you don't know what the weather is going to be like, if it's going to be like warm enough for you to go out. I don't know. So you can make these in the cast iron pan, right? Isn't that how you made it?
Yeah. I mean, you actually would do this on a cast iron pan. You wouldn't, it's the best way to do it.
Right. But if you're in the mood for steak
and
you don't, if it's too cold to maybe go outside just yet, you can make your steak inside and by making these garlic butter steak bites.
Yeah. It's a great dish. It's super simple. I think it's a novice cook dish. Mm-hmm. This is actually one where you got to get your pan like hot because you're searing these cubes of meat, and you can do different types of meat. If you want to go expensive, you can use filet. If you want to go cheaper, just you can use like sirloin or something. And that's what I use. I use sirloin in the recipe. I actually want to do a video for this, but I think I'm going to kind of boost it by making a chimichurri and mixing the chimichurri, like spooning it all on top of it.
That sounds great.
Yeah, right?
I love chimichurri. All right, a few more. I'll just rattle off. Pork loin, really anyway, I think is good for spring. Chicken involtini.
Oh, yeah.
Steak Diane and roasted leg of lamb.
Steak Diane I more associate with winter, though it's quick. It can be made for, you know, in the spring. What was that last one?
Chicken involtini and roasted leg of lamb.
Roasted leg of lamb, yeah. I mean, I definitely think lamb is I just associate lamb with spring. Mm-hmm. I do.
I think a lot of people do.
I like those baby lamb chops that Costco sells.
Those
we actually have them
so good.
We have them in the fridge.
Those are good with just some like Moroccan spices on it.
Yeah, any spice. Yeah.
You don't need to do much of anything with those.
And when you buy it, if you go to Costco, and you should go to Costco because you will save tons of money. The prices are astronomically cheaper. We went there. We were picking up. We got the corned beef for St. Patty's Day, but like we bought a bunch of meat. The meat prices are, they're like three times less. It's one time with that membership and you get your money back. But we got the lamb there.
Yep.
And the lamb, it comes in a rack. So like it's a rack of lamb. I like to just separate them. So you have each one is a little baby lamb chop. And then you put your spices on, like Tara's saying, and then grill them. And they only take a few minutes. They are delicious. Mm-hmm. I call them the lamb lollipops.
Yes, that's right.
Right?
That's what they are. So let's move into spring salads.
Okay.
Because in our house, we try and end our meal with a salad. And for us, a salad usually means a mixed, like, I usually get like a red leaf lettuce or green leaf or romaine. Just chop it up and then we put homemade dressing on it. It's nothing complicated. And I think it's a good way to end the meal. It helps with digestion. By the time this podcast episode airs, we will have another addition to our homemade dressing, which will be a homemade balsamic vinaigrette.
Mm, that was good.
We've also got an Italian vinaigrette. We've got a French vinaigrette. And we do have a Greek dressing that's part of the
we got to put a separate recipe for that. What is it called again?
Actually, so there's two. There's the Lotto Lemono, which is part of the roasted leg of lamb recipe, but then we also have another type of dressing in the Greek pasta salad.
Oh yeah.
Recipe.
Yeah, which is similar.
Yeah. So sometimes like if you have a salad every night and you're like, "Oh, I'm bored. I don't want to have a salad again." You can just change up the dressing that you're making and it'll some things go better with like when I serve the balsamic dressing, I like to serve it with some blue cheese on the salad because I think
that's what we had last night. That was good.
Yeah, because I think blue cheese goes really well with the balsamic dressing. Whereas if I'm doing...
And some cherry tomatoes, that would be nice.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of red onion.
Yeah. Whereas if I'm doing the Italian dressing, maybe I'd want to do... like a shaved onion on top of the salad or some radishes. I think radishes go really well with the Italian dressing. But then, of course, we have chicken Caesar salad. So we Caesar salad, dressing in that one. And I also, one of my favorite salads, which again is using one of those ingredients I mentioned, is the orange and fennel salad.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Sicilian style salad. There's no lettuce in it. I mean, although you could certainly add, you know, green lettuce to it, but it's just orange, like orange slices with sea salt, some pine nuts.
I added fennel.
Fennel.
But, you know, the simplest way would just be to just do oranges with olive oil and salt.
That's true.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like something that would work.
It works.
But oh boy, does it work.
It works. It's delicious.
I hope you got something out of this springtime episode. If you have any ideas, maybe something that we completely missed, let us know in the comments. Without further ado, it's time to try those tiramisus. Tiramisu from Costco. This one is made with Italian mascarpone.
Mascarpone.
Thank you for correcting me. Tara gets so mad about that. Now, look, this has like a best date. Best by April 4th, 2024. So, yeah, these are like, I'm going to go out on a limb and say these have to be better than this, but who knows? We might be pleasantly surprised. I will read the ingredients after we taste it, right?
Yes, yeah. So you're not biased.
Yeah. All right, so I think we just take one of them. Take one of them out. We will share. The kids saw these things, and they were like, what's going on? When are you doing a taste test?
Because they wanted to dive into it.
Okay, so while Tara opens that, the other one I have is Balcony Tiramisu. Wet sponge cake. Now, I hold out hope this is going to be good, too.
The Costco one smells really good. These are glass jars.
Wow.
You know what? Okay.
This doesn't look bad either.
That doesn't look bad. These are really good. You know why?
Why?
First of all, we have to get a recipe up on the website for panna cotta. Okay? That's one of my favorite recipes to make. One of my favorite desserts.
Yes.
That's actually an excellent springtime dessert. Okay, we have to do this.
Yeah, we will. I always put it off. Wow.
So the reason why I like these cups is because if you make panna cotta, you can make individual servings of it, and then you can top it with like fresh berries, yes, or whatever. These little glasses would be perfect. So you save them, and then when you make your panna cotta, you pour it in, set them all up in the fridge, and that's it.
Yeah, that's...
These are the perfect serving sizes. So can we please save these glasses for that?
Yeah, we will. I'm going to move this back here. It makes sense. These are glass. It's very heavy.
Yeah.
Okay. So this one looks good, too.
That does look good.
Looks pretty good.
I actually wasn't expecting it to look like that.
All right, which one do you want to try first?
Let's try this one first.
Okay.
Let's try the shelf-stable one first.
Yeah, so we're trying the shelf-stable one first. The name of it is Balcony Tiramisu. It's a coffee wet sponge cake. It's with mascarpone cream and dusted with cocoa powder. I mean, it's shelf-stable.
It smells really good.
Okay, you go first. Actually, we'll both go.
If this is good, this might just change things for me.
I'm surprised they're able to get something like that in shelf stable.
I don't even know how this is shelf stable. This is excellent.
It is.
It has a really strong coffee flavor, which I really like. Hmm. The layers they're not like overly dense.
Ingredients, there's a lot of stuff in here. Number one is glucose syrup, okay. Sugar, coffee liqueur. That's also made from glucose syrup, coffee, alcohol, water, artificial flavors, eggs, vegetable oil shortening, palm kernel. There's so much stuff here.
Yeah.
There's just so much stuff.
All right, there's a lot.
It contains wheat, milk, eggs, may contain soy and tree nuts, hazelnut, coconut, almond, pistachio, walnuts, okay? Nope, mention of peanuts, so I think Sammy can have it.
Okay.
I agree with Tara. This is good. Now, the only thing is your opinion might change a little bit when we go to the other one.
I know, but I will say, okay, I went into this thinking that this one was just not going to be good because there's, I didn't think there was any way. And I am pleasantly surprised. Would I serve this for dessert to company? No. Would I put it out in a pinch if somebody stopped by? And yeah, maybe I would.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. Okay, let's move on to the next one.
I'm not happy about all those ingredients, though.
Well, I think
this one's... But I know they need it.
I think this one's probably going to have a lot of them, too. Yeah. But let's taste first.
All right, I'm taking some from the bottom up.
I see that. So you get that chocolate line and everything.
The entire bite. And it's... For those of you listening, the bottom layer is kind of like a coffee... It looks like a coffee syrup, followed by almost like an inch and a half thick layer of cream, followed by another thin layer of like coffee, and then at the top of it has more cream and is dusted with cocoa powder.
Yeah, and this cream would, you know, it's supposed to be a zabaione. That's traditionally what it is, though. You'll see some recipes that will use whipped cream instead, or you can mix, I think, the zabaione and whipped cream together to make a diplomat, right? So you can do that as well.
I don't know. I think Sammy may have been the one that was telling you about this.
Let's see.
I actually think I need to try this again.
Okay. All right. I have my thoughts.
Me too.
Can I go first or do you want to go first?
Go ahead.
This is nowhere near as good as the other thing.
I am 100% in agreement with you. I am so surprised.
I am kind of shocked.
This doesn't taste like tiramisu.
No.
This doesn't even really taste that good.
All right. This is a product of Italy. The ingredients are glucose syrup, reconstituted skim milk, water skim milk powder, water mascarpone, cream, milk, sponge cake. Then it has a whole bunch of stuff for the sponge cake. There's coconut oil in here. There's Marsala wine is in here.
Is there coffee in it?
Yeah, coffee extract, which is the last ingredient.
It's the last ingredient.
It's the last ingredient. I taste no coffee in it.
I don't taste any coffee.
Yeah. Let me take one more bite.
I am shocked. I went into this super excited to eat the one from Costco and not so excited for the other one. And I feel like the tables were turned on me.
I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like the best thing about this is the glass jar.
I am surprised. Costco's stuff is normally really good. So tiramisu is a relatively new recipe in Italy. It's not like it's been around for 100 years. I believe it actually didn't really appear in cooking books till about the 70s or 80s. If you know the truth here, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't have a computer in front of me, but it's definitely not something that has this historical significance. I believe it kind of was created around the same time penne alla vodka was, and all those cream pastas in Italy. Now, and by the way, all those cream pastas originate from Italy, not from America. This doesn't taste to me like traditional tiramisu is supposed to taste. It has no coffee flavor. It kind of has a artificial taste to it. Extremely artificial taste.
It does. And according to this article that I found, it says tiramisu, also known as Tuscan trifle, is a delicious Italian custard-like dessert originating in the region of Treviso or Treviso, Italy. The origins of this dessert have long been disputed, but research suggests that it originated in the late 1960s or early 1970s.
See, I know. I don't just talk out of my behind all the time. I kind of do that. It says
debunked myths have dated tiramisu's origin to the 17th century when a similar dessert was created for the Grand Duke Cosimo de' Medici III.
A lot of times I notice this in Italian, like it'll be like a Reddit thread or it'll be some historian. They always are trying to push things back further than they are, saying like the originate, you know, no, this isn't an old thing. It's relatively new. And there's a lot of other stuff. And apparently a lot of the stuff like the street food and everything that's being served and sold in Rome now doesn't have any similarity to stuff from the past. Say food changes, though in Italian food in general changes at a snail's pace compared to the rest of the planet.
I would like to do an experiment tonight. Obviously, our listeners and viewers won't be able to see it, but I would really like to see what the kids think of both of these.
I would be shocked if either one of them thought that one was better. Now, listen, I'm going to give this out of 10. I want to score this out of 10. Tower, what does it get?
It gets a 5.
A 5, huh?
Yeah. I actually might even give it less, but I'm giving it a 5 because I like the glass that it's coming in. Oh,
that is not a good reason. Like, you're not buying that for the glass. I mean, you can get glasses anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm giving it a 3, and I'm being generous with that 3. Now, this one, on the other hand, is good for what it is. And I think this has to score high because it's shelf stable.
Yeah, which that's what I'm shocked about.
I'm shocked too.
I went in thinking like, oh, it's probably not fair for us to compare because this one is going to be so much better. I'm telling you, I am shocked.
So again, the Costco one is just called tiramisu. It's like, there's no branding on here. So it's probably just made. Yeah, it's made for Costco.
Is it actually made in Italy, or just made with Italian mascarpone? It
says made in Italy. Now, this one, on the other hand, Balcone, I'm going to give it a 9. The reason I'm giving it a 9 is because it is shelf stable. If this was in the refrigerator section, I would downgrade it to about a 6.5. Because it's nowhere near as good as my tiramisu recipe. It's just not. But again, knowing that it comes from, like, buy this package, probably like expiration date's probably 2 years from now.
What is the expiration date?
August 28th, 2024.
When I'm comparing this, I should really be comparing it to, what would you say, like Entenmann's? Doesn't Entenmann's spoil more quickly, though?
Yeah, no, it's not really comparable to Entenmann's either. This is a sealed bag.
It's a sealed bag. All right, so because this one is truly shelf stable, I am giving it a 10.
Yeah, I gave it a 9.
Because it is the best shelf-stable packaged snack I've ever had.
Now, question, is this the same brand that that scored really bad with the Cornetto, or is it a different brand?
The Cornetto was like Doria or something like that. We have other snacks.
By this brand,
by
right?
By Balcone.
Okay.
That are downstairs.
Stay tuned.
And I am now really, really excited to try those.
We got a whole area in our closet devoted to these taste tests. So we've been accumulating things. We don't want to do 10 items in one episode. All right, let's move on to the questions.
Okay. The Costco tiramisu is what the Italians would call merda.
Merda?
Merda.
What does that mean?
It means, I'm not going to say it because we're a family show, but it means the SH word. It
means crap.
Crap. Yeah. All right, Jim, this first question comes from Linda. I see a lot of people on YouTube channels where they keep their pizza stones in the oven all the time, no matter what they are baking at any temperature. I have one, never used, still in the box. Just didn't want to deal with taking it in and out. Is it a good idea to keep it in the oven, and does it increase your oven temperature, which could be a disaster if you're baking a cake?
So Linda, I leave my steel in a lot of the time. I actually have it out right now, but you can leave it in, whether you're stone or steel. What it will do is it's not going to increase the temperature of your oven. It's going to increase the time your oven takes to cool. So what happens is, say you're doing a braise, like a 3-hour braise, and you get your oven to temp 325 degrees. You do a 3-hour braise, like a chuck roast, say a pot roast. You remove it, your oven would take normally 20 minutes to cool down, but because the stone or steel is in there, that's actually a huge heat sink. So what it's going to do is it's going to emit that heat it holds it, and then it emits it on as slower, so your oven will take longer to cool down. So I guess in the summer, you wouldn't want that because it would keep your house hotter and you'd have to use, you know, your air conditioning to cool it down. In the winter, it probably works to your advantage. And that's actually what a lot of city people would do. They would have their oven on to heat up their apartments when the landlord was like cutting the heat or not letting them raise the thermostat or whatever.
Wow. Yep. Interesting. All right. Well, Linda, I hope that answers your question. Jim, the next question is from Pam. What are your thoughts on enameled saute pans? We don't have any cast iron, but we do have an enameled Dutch oven. It's possible you've mentioned it, and I've just not gotten to the episode yet. So enameled saute pans.
Pam, I don't have one of those. I don't think you need them, because if you heat up a stainless steel pan properly, it's essentially works as a nonstick. So, and that would be my saute pan of choice. It's lighter than, you know, these enamel things are going to be heavy, so it's going to be hard to flip, which I know a lot of people don't care about, but it is an important technique when you're cooking pasta. You're doing, what's it called, how it starts with an M?
Oh, Montechiari?
Yeah.
Is that the right?
That's it. I think it is. I'm going with Tara, so you blame her if she said it wrong.
Montecator.
That would be my concern there. Do they work well? Yeah, I mean, a lot of people just want to have the whole Le Creuset collection, so they want those enameled sauté pans. But I'm a stainless steel sauté pan guy, and I occasionally will use a nonstick for eggs, for stuff like that, that you really need a purely nonstick surface.
It is Montecatura, which is a quick process carried out at the end of cooking, allowing all the ingredients to bind together.
Yeah, so when you flip your pasta, basically like you slap, the pasta slaps as you're flipping it, and it will, the sauce will cling to it, versus if you don't do that, and it'll just kind of like roll off more.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, you know, you can kind of simulate it with like tongs doing it really fast. I hope I'm answering that question. I don't think that I need one of those enameled saute pans.
Yeah, I don't even recall seeing an enameled saute pan.
They do.
Le
Creuset has everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. I mean, I would say just go with the stainless steel, or just cast iron, and
yeah,
like you have one of each, both for different things, and
yeah,
I wouldn't get an enameled saute pan.
Yeah, we did a whole episode on pots and pans, but I would have a 10-inch stainless. I would have a 12-inch, and then you know I really like a 14-inch because that's like I call it like the family size one. That's all you need there, and then you know you have your pots, and then I would just have like one decent quality nonstick, because nonstick is just going to go bad eventually, no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Tara said cast iron. It's good to have a couple cast irons too, though. Mm-hmm. I don't use them nearly as much as some people do.
That's it.
All right. podcast@sipandfeast.com. We love reading your questions. We love talking about them here. We also love these taste tests. So if there's anything you are interested in for us to do, let us know there too, because we will add it to the list. But we do definitely have a collection building right now downstairs. No, it's every day. I'm like looking at that. I'm like, ooh. It's like kind of like we didn't know what we were going to do today. Yeah. There was a lot of not debate, but choices.
Yeah, they were good choices.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I was really impressed with that shelf stable balcony.
I am impressed for sure.
So like told me, Jim, you got to tell me right now which one's going to do better. I mean, there would never be a situation where I would have picked that one to win.
Never. I actually wonder, like, are restaurants like serving that? Like, no,
restaurants don't serve that one, but I heard my brother was saying that they get it from the restaurant supply stores
or something.
Yeah. Because they sell them in those huge, tremendous.
I could see like, maybe not a restaurant, but maybe like a pizzeria. If they have like tiramisu on their menu, I could see them opening up one of those and like cutting a little slice of it. And
yeah, I mean, but I also think the pizzerias are getting it from the supply store.
Yeah.
It's just not something that restaurants want to pay. Most restaurants don't have a pastry chef.
Yeah.
If you go to culinary school, don't go into pastry. Go do the regular cooking. I mean, you'll have a lot more opportunity for jobs.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what you want. If you dream of becoming a restaurant, though,
it's better to be.
But if you want to like work in a bakery and you want to make like fancy wedding cakes and stuff like that, then go to pastry.
A lot of people just can't make it to dessert. They like, fill up and then it's just.
Who are these people? I don't know
this person right here. Okay. Until next time.